Hello, Saver. Whether you're saving for that trip to the tropics or saving for an emergency, now is the time to take advantage of Wells Fargo's savings options. Wells Fargo offers savings accounts that can help you save towards your goals. So, what are you saving for? Visit a Wells Fargo branch or wellsfargo.com/save to open a savings account today.
Wells Fargo Bank N.A. Member FDIC.
Today's episode is brought to you by the Atlanta Vision Institute. The Atlanta Vision Institute was the first in Georgia to use SMILE, the most advanced laser eye surgery procedure. This procedure is done with a high-tech precision laser. It's simple, takes about 6 to 8 minutes in its entirety. It's an easy recovery, requiring minimal post-op care. Most people are amazed at how effortless it is. You're going to experience substantially improved vision just a few hours after this surgery. Dr. Ashraf was on staff at Johns Hopkins University. He's board certified, and he's completed over 40,000 LASIK procedures. So go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute. Check this out. You can mention my name and get 20% off a consultation. To learn more, go to atlanta2020.com/Matt. That's me, M-A-T-T. atlanta2020.com/Matt. Go check out the Atlanta Vision Institute at atlanta2020.com. To the Atlanta Podcast. I am your host, Matt B. Davis. Good to be with you. I know it's been slightly over a week, but that's okay. We're cranking these things out as we do. So happy to be back in Atlanta. And can I say it? Yes. Fall is here. The temperatures have dropped. We turned the AC and the heat off. We just opened some windows. It is awesome here in the ATL. Oh my God, what a lame singing that is. Clearly, I've had some coffee this morning. Ladies and gentlemen, if you didn't hear, we, that's you and I, the listener and me, the content producer, we did not win the reader's pick, but we did win the critic's pick for best podcast in Atlanta, Creative Loafing. Thank you so much, The Loaf. Critic's pick, best podcast, 2018. It sure is nice to win stuff. I feel great. Thank you, thank you, thank you. There was a little party last night or two nights ago. I didn't make it. I'm bummed. But I've got a bunch of kids, and my wife works, and I just can't do as much as I once did. Can't get a sitter for everything. Can you hear me? Do you hear me? Parents listening to this right now, parents in the car, raise your hand. On a run, raise your hand. You just can't do it. I mean, you get a sitter for certain stuff, but you just can't do it for everything, especially on short notice. So I was not able to do that. If you follow me personally, you'll know I did an event last weekend called 29029. I hiked up a mountain 17 times. Not exactly in a row, but close over the period of 24 hours or so. And it was an amazing event, and there will be an entire episode coming out about that on my other program, Obstacle Racing Media. So look for that coming out soon. I do just want to get to today's episode with Tess. If you know Tess, she's got a smile on her face pretty much every time you see her. She puts on her own races. You'll see her volunteering at the Peachtree Expo and maybe the Publix Expo. She puts on really cool races. We've run into each other over the years because I'm in running communities and now I put on my own race as well. And she's a great gal and I'm so glad I had her on. It was a couple months back. We did it right here on the old front porch, which are some of my favorite places to do interviews. We had a nice chat and she's a great lady. So let's get into it. Tess, running nerds, away we go.
Where are you from? Where'd you grow up?
Well, I'm from Gary, Indiana, and I claim Gary.
Like the Jacksons?
Yes, like the Jacksons. And I claim Gary because I was born there and I graduated from high school there. Okay. But I moved around a lot in between, so I kind of lived all over. I think I counted, I've lived in 7 or 8 different states.
Right.
And literally just like zigzagged the country with my mom. You know, all of her life changes happened while I was growing up, so where she had to go,
right,
I had to go. And then after graduating, I went to Virginia, University of Virginia, which you said on your podcast with Joel you didn't know another UVA grad. You know two now.
Okay, there we go. And you've talked to him, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you do races over there. We'll get to that.
So Yeah, so I've lived all over, but I claim
Gary. And I called it the Hokies, but it's the Cavaliers.
It's the Cavaliers, right. Yes. So I claim Gary, Indiana. It's my hometown. That's where I'm from. I still have family there. So.
Okay, and when did you get here?
I came to Georgia in 2007. I started off as a women's basketball coach at Augusta State University. And got fired from that job. Apparently they wanted me to win games, things like that.
Hang on, we have to back up.
Okay.
We have to back up. I went to Augusta State University.
Really?
When it was Augusta College.
Yes.
In 1991. I have never met anyone that's been anywhere close to there before.
Really?
So
yep,
now,
I was there. And they've changed the name like 3 times since then.
Well, I remember when Kennesaw was KSC,
uh-huh.
And now it's been KSU for a long time.
Yeah.
But I went to, okay, so all my friends went to Georgia. Uh-huh. Right? I grew up here, and if you grew up in the suburbs here, all your friends went to SEC schools, sure. 95% went to Georgia, okay? And I wanted to go where all my friends were going, but my grades were horrible.
Uh-huh.
So the one school I could get into that my friend Dave went to was Augusta. And so I went there for a year, and I've never met... I don't even know if we had it. No, we did have a team because we were in that. I was always seeing who to root for. There was always a 16 seed in the conference, in the tournament that came
from. Yeah, they're Division II. But so I don't know if they were Division II as a
But back
college,
then but. They weren't. Back then they were like.
Probably NAI or something.
No, I want to say like Atlanta Coastal. There was some conference, not the ACC obviously. Uh-huh. There was some conference that like they got a bid.
Uh-huh.
There was whoever won the conference was always a 16 seed that would lose in the first round
right.
of the tournament, but I would always root for that school, whoever the heck they were.
Yeah.
So you did not win many games.
No. It was a tough situation. I was there for... So that's what brought me to Georgia.
Right.
And then when I was let go, I could go anywhere because, you know, I came to Georgia for that job. And that was, I came from Michigan.
Were you coaching high school?
No, I was coaching college at 2 different schools, in Ohio, one in Ohio, one in Michigan. And then I went to Augusta State. That was my second head coaching job.
Okay.
But after that, I could live anywhere, so I decided to come to Atlanta. So I came to Atlanta in 2010, and yeah, the rest is history as far as where I've been. This is the longest I've ever lived in one state, in one city. And been in one area.
When you were a baller, as uh-huh. it were you one of the few people that liked running?
No, I used to hate running. I was the one that, like, even as a coach, my teams, I never made them run more than a mile. I didn't believe in it. I didn't.
Well, I know, but it's a lot of short.
Yeah.
It's a lot of, what do you call them? Suicides?
I was one of those people that would, you know, all the stuff that your runner, non-runner friends say to you about, oh, I'll be there at the finish, and da da. I said all of that stuff. And so, the reason why, do you want me to go into why I started running personally?
Sure.
So the reason why I started running, so after I got fired from Augusta State, I still had to be there for about 6 months. And obviously.
And teach?
No, I was teaching and they reassigned me in the college to do some work in the library or something like that. And so
Is the rule that they can't just fire you and send you on your way? Like
well,
they have
I mean,
to keep you?
I had to finish out my contract so I'd get paid, and I wasn't going to turn that down.
Sorry, I'm like going to shut my door.
Yeah, so trying to think the order of things, but so for that 6 months, it was about like 5 months, I would go to work, do what I had to do, and then I would pretty much go home, and I joined a gym, and I did my first spin classes. I'd never done spin classes before, and I started going to the riverfront in Augusta, which is actually very beautiful,
right.
And I would start at the beginning and run like 10 minutes out and then come back. Or probably not even 10 minutes, 5 minutes out and come back. So I built myself up to be able to run like 2 or 3 miles outdoors. And so my first weekend in Atlanta was the first weekend in May of 2010. And I had signed up for the Susan Komen Race for the Cure. It was the only 5K that I had ever heard about in my non-running life because,
right.
you know, breast cancer awareness was
right.
a big push in women's basketball. So I'd always known about those types of events. So I signed up for the Komen Race for the Cure. That was my first 5K. So when I came to Atlanta, I moved here on a Friday. Saturday morning, got up and ran the 5K and really liked it. It was cool. I had only known like 2 or 3 people that had ever done a 5K. So I was like, well, what's a good time and what should I do and what to expect? And even my training up to the 5K, I didn't even run 3 miles.
Right.
So the 5K was the first time I ran 3 miles.
Right.
So that led to just being more interested in physical fitness, and I ended up getting a job as a personal trainer at one of those local studios here in Atlanta. And I didn't run again until a coworker of mine the following January, she said, we should sign up for this 10K they're doing in Atlantic Station, the Shamrock and Roll. So I was like, okay, well, I've only done a 5K and I hadn't really been running much since then. I was, you know, doing the personal training and things like that. So we started training for the 10K. So we would go from our studio in Midtown and just run around like Georgia Tech area. And so you know that area, super hilly. And we did the 10K, the Shamrock and Roll 10K. And that was the first time I'd ever run 6 miles. I even trained up to 5 miles, I think. So after that, I was hooked. I was like, I really loved seeing myself get better at something. You know, the days of going and playing basketball for 2 or 3 hours for cardio, those days were behind me. You know, I was early 30s at that point. After that, I just was inspired to continue running. And I had this, and this is a true story, I had this crazy thought. I was like, you know, one thing I'm noticing is that I don't really see a lot of black people out running these races. You know, I thought they were fun. I was like, it'd be kind of cool to start like a black women's running group. And literally the next week is when I found out about Black Girls Run.
Okay.
And I joined signed on to be an ambassador. So I thought in my mind I was going to start this idea of getting women together because I was living in the West End.
Right.
But, you know, very grateful for the vision of the founders of Black Girls Run. They started Black Girls Run and I became an ambassador, became a running community leader. From there, started putting on races, and now 6 years later, here we are.
All right, we have to back up a little bit though. So first of all, interesting that you don't see a lot of black women, mm-hmm. right? Because clearly, like in high school, in track, mm-hmm. like I don't know about where you went to school, but that's where the black athletes were,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
They were, you know, they were on the sports teams, they were the track stars. Like that's, I mean, I went to a predominantly, it's funny, now where I live, it's, I mean, I don't know if you know anything about, so I grew up in Cobb County, mm-hmm. right? And Cobb County was kind of the same as it is now.
Yeah.
Like I don't think the term East Cobb snob had been invented yet, but that's pretty much who lived there.
Yeah.
And my school was probably 90% white.
Uh-huh.
And they redistricted once I was gone. So, because there's different, lots of different, like I was in Marietta, but I was in the very white part of Marietta. Mm-hmm. And they redistricted it, whatever that word is, and the school became a lot more African-American.
Uh-huh.
And our basketball team has produced professional, Sharif Abdul-Rahim, somebody else I can't remember, uh-huh. like 3 or 4 state titles. Like, we were never a basketball school. We were a football school.
Uh-huh.
Like, football was fucking live or die. So anyhow, where's I going with this? Because they're also not in my sport, in obstacle racing.
Right.
There's like zero black people on the podium.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why that is. I have a couple of theories.
Yeah.
I would love to
I've
know
got
what
some theories too.
I would
yeah.
love to know what your theories are. We can compare them.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm definitely excited to kind of get into, you know, why I enjoy and where I feel my role is in the whole production of races.
Right.
Which kind of ties to that, but one of my I think obvious theories is that it's just not something that we see, we meaning African American youth, as a step up, you know what I mean? So what I mean is I went to a predominantly black high school in Gary, Indiana, predominantly black city. Let's be real, it's an all black city. I think
okay.
you can count the number of, you know,
still today.
Well, there's some sections that are changing now, but for the most part. But anyway, so we knew that we could play basketball, we could play football, we could run track, which is, track is not distance running. Track is track. That's 100, 200, 400, 800. Maybe you get a miler or a the 800. But when you talk about cross country and above, we didn't see that as, oh, I could get a scholarship or I could, you know, go on to play, whatever it may be. Now, of course, every athlete doesn't have the raw talent to go even to the next level of college, but for the most part, you're not seeing that as a distance running as a stepping stone to a higher achievement. So not seeing it, that means you're not gonna aspire to it, you know what I mean?
Right.
So having those role models, I mean, I think that's really the biggest thing. I mean, even in the distance running world, The majority of people that start off running or start running, they started in their like late 20s, early 30s, maybe even early 40s, because they want to improve their health or they find some. But you know, those folks that are that were lifelong runners, majority of those either ran those distances at a younger age and then they continued. You really see a big, and I don't know if it's the same in obstacle racing, that that 20 to 25 age group is the missing group. Because they're, you know, not ready to, you know, they don't care, you know.
Right.
Or they were college athletes and they get burnt out, so they take that time off.
Right. I know that. I know that I can't age group. I can't podium my own age group. I know that because there's too much competition.
Oh, yeah. The 40 and up.
Right.
Ridiculous. I just turned 40 this year and, yeah, or last year. So that's kind of one of my theories, I think, is like the obvious, you know, it's not a glamour sport. It's not a sport that you can aspire to get, you know, sports drink contracts and that kind of thing. So,
right.
Now, what do you think?
Well, with OCR specifically, mm-hmm. there's this concept that it's like, honestly, like, this is, tell me what you think, like, silly white folk stuff. Like, oh, like, that's not what we even do.
Right.
Right? And and that we want to spend $100 and whatever on. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it seems like, because there is some like there's definitely some long runs, but there's some short ones mm-hmm. that, you know, like I remember when I was talking to a friend of mine who was like killing it in the gym, and I'm like, why don't you like you're not only fast, but you're agile and you can jump, and I think feel like you would kill these obstacle races. And he's like, I've never run more than a mile. Like even a 3 mile race seems like a long race.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the distance aspect of it definitely is
But I don't even think of 3 miles as far because of kind of what we do.
Exactly. But remember, the test 10 years ago that was coaching basketball, if you had told me 3 miles, I'm like, there's no way. So.
But when you play basketball in high school, did you think I want to be in the NBA, or did you always want to coach?
No. So I'm not saying that every athlete aspires to be.
I'm just asking about you personally.
Oh no! I knew I wasn't that good. I was the one that was on the team that was a good rebounder. You know.
But everybody needs a good rebounder.
Yes, but the good rebounder isn't the one that's aspiring to be in the WNBA. Well, the WNBA wasn't around when I was in high school. But no, I always wanted to be involved in sports. You know, I went to school. I started off as a physical therapy major, and then I switched to health and physical education. And I knew I wanted to coach probably about 2 or 3 years into college, because I used to work our basketball camps and things like that. So I've always loved like being a leader and taking a team and taking it from a group of random people to building this like kind of community.
Right.
So that's been a constant theme in everything I've ever done. You know, being kind of a leader and taking ideas and making them into something. So
did you start the groups first or the races first? Did you start like the Running Nerds first? Like, how did all that come together?
So I started Running Nerds. The first thing I ever did was made a Facebook page, because that's how all great
of course
start.
Absolutely.
Facebook page. And then I decided to put on a race. So the Running Nerds 5K was the first race I ever put on.
Which was where?
So it took place in the West Midtown area. I still do actually work at the Howard School part time, do subbing and things like that, and I coach cross country there. And the Howard School is right in West Midtown by the Goat Farm.
Okay.
You familiar with that area?
Yes.
So I actually went to the school and I said, hey, I want to put on a 5K. Could I use the campus as a start and finish location? So, that was the first 5K. So from that race idea.
My wife's here, but that's fine.
Wife, from that 5K, what I tried to do was build a community around running this 5K. So that's how the West Midtown Run Club started. It was a running group in that neighborhood to kind of, you know, build up the excitement for running. And then that grew into just Running Nerds as a kind of a Atlanta organization.
Right.
Because, of course, you know, we started putting on more races throughout the community. So it kind of grew simultaneously, the group and the idea of putting on races.
Right. Now, you know, I always have kind of half paid attention to the, I'll just call it the street running world, because obviously clearly I'm into the dirt and obstacles, but I've always kind of watched it. And you know, you read these numbers, you read these reports that running is down, yet I feel like there's always a new race.
Yeah.
Like, so first of all, there's always a neighborhood festival, and every neighborhood festival has a 5K to go with it, right? Hello. Do you need help with anything, honey? You good? He's going to sit out here. It's fine, probably. That's River. So it seems like, if you go to Run Georgia, right, or I don't know what other sites you're featured
that's
on.
That's the main one, yeah.
Any given weekend, spring and fall, right, race.
Yeah.
And our state's big enough that you can have one in Cumming, Marietta, Morrow, Athens. Well, you know what I'm saying? Like, they don't even compete with each other, right, necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a saturated area. But I always look at it as a positive thing. I mean, we could have 100 drug busts in a weekend, but we have 100 races in a weekend. You know? So
that is a nice positive spin. I've not heard of it that way.
I do a lot of consulting for races, and I definitely try to make sure that folks understand all that it takes and all that the pros and cons of putting on races. And you know, I've seen some organizations really put on some really cool events and make some money for their causes. You know, my events are not nonprofit events, but we always try to have some kind of community kickback,
right,
maybe one of the neighborhoods or a charity that we partner with. And, you know, our races are more just fun races. My race series is called Run Social. So all of our races have some type of social aspect to them. And also just building up the community in which we're putting on the races. We try to, you know, get the different businesses involved. But there's a lot going on. Like this past weekend, I'm the race director for Girls on the Run Atlanta. We had our race. Atlanta Track Club had a race. There was a race at Chastain Park. There was a race at Piedmont Park.
Oh, wow.
I mean, all those things happened, and everyone had a good turnout. So, I mean, I always hate to see races not do well.
Right.
But I think if you're realistic about kind of what you want to get out of it, then you can have a successful event. You know, 300 to 400 people for one organization might be, you know, wow, we got 300 people. Whereas another one, they were aiming for 1,000, and if they only get 700, that, you know, so it really just depends on what your goals are.
Well, I mean, I guess that's one of the things that I would ask you is, What's a good turnout for you? What do you think they can be? Because there's obviously some limits. Like,
where
no one's going to be the peach tree but the peach tree,
right?
You're not going to get 50,000 people out. But like a first year event, for example, what do you want to get if you have a first year event?
It totally depends on your venue. You know,
I'm asking you.
My events, each of my events. So we have the Topgolf 5K, which we just had on March 31st. Our next event is Urban Tree Cidery 5K. The third event is going to be the Monday Nighter. It's a new race at the garage. So that being a new race.
Right, I should do that one, right?
Absolutely.
Because it's my neighborhood.
Walk over there. That would be a new race. It's all projection. Like, we don't know what to expect. And then we do our ATL Relay, that's how we met.
Right, I sent someone to it because I couldn't make it.
Yeah, so that one is...
But that was like 5 years ago.
It's in its seventh year this year.
I feel like 12 or 13 was when I first reached out to you.
Yep. And then we have the West End Mile, which we just keep doing.
That's right here?
Yes. And then the Monday Night Brewing West Side 10, which is our third longest running
race. And I did that one winter.
Froze
my ass off.
Yes.
But I really like that race.
So each race has its own kind of goal and purpose, but all with the same overarching purpose of being kind of fun, social. Like, you run the race and then you want to stay after because there's fun things to
do
after.
Right, because that's my big beef with most street races.
Yeah. You get your banana, your t-shirt, and you go home. And you have to listen to a speech about some charity, which, you know, nothing against charity races, but, you know, I'm like, let's have a fun venue. So to answer your question, you know, we set a goal and then we cap those races so that the experience is great for everyone who participates. And it's based on the venue, the size, what they can accommodate.
Well, let's talk about this one. Uh-huh. So are you working with the Beltline, or are you just doing it and hope they don't say anything?
Well, the streets are owned by City of Atlanta.
Oh, okay.
So when you do permitting,
right?
You are permitting the streets.
Right.
Even the Beltline Trail is City of Atlanta.
Right.
When they first started, you used to have to go through the Beltline to run on the Beltline, but I think they turned that over. I'm guessing it probably got too complicated, because if you had to permit a race that ran on part of the Beltline, you had to get City of Atlanta, and you had to go... So you We, I think the Beltline, they should be aware of
the
event.
So the Monday Nighter, it's not back there, it's up here?
We're running, it's 5K and a 10K. So we're going to get a little bit of the neighborhood, and then we're going to be primarily on the Beltline. It's a very creative course, if I do say so myself.
So you don't want to run straight Beltline?
Well, you can't get 6 miles straight Beltline.
I mean, you could do...
That'd be a lot of looping. I'll show you the course.
No, I'm sure I can go look.
We're going to get a lot of the Beltline.
So for me...
All the way to Washington Park
So just so you know, because I've run it many times.
Oh, yeah.
So from here to Washington Park is 2.5, right?
But you got to go up and over and down and back over.
No, I'm talking about if you were on the actual Beltline, just like from there to there, and you're on the dirt right here. That's the only unpaved part is the dirt right here. That's 2.5-ish. And from here to where Angels ends is like... I want to say just I guess that's only a mile. I don't know about
this. You think, when I was mapping it out, I was like, oh, we're going to get 10K. And I was like, oh my gosh, we have to go off-road just to get the extra distance.
Right.
5K you can
get
easily.
I think that, is my assumption that getting the, like, even to get a cop for a couple hours, that I feel like that's the biggest expense.
Yes.
Because aren't they like $500 an hour?
No, they're not $500 an hour.
$250. There's something crazy because when I was involved with the Little Five Points Festival, that to me was like, what are we paying these people?
Yeah. The police are the biggest expense. Then t-shirts and then medals and all that stuff. If you decide to get all that. All that. But the race that we're putting on the Monday Nighter is Running Nerds in partnership with Monday Night Brewing.
Okay.
They are the hosts of the venue.
Right.
But yeah, that one's going to be really special. We got a cool dinosaur theme going. Did you see our shirt design?
I just looked at. We want to talk about this.
Yeah. Oh yeah, we definitely got to
talk about that because I didn't even know about that.
Yes. We definitely want to talk about that. So we're excited about that. That's the one new race in the series. And then the other ones are all your second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth year.
Right.
And that's Run Social. So that's my series of events. And it's really kind of a trial and error of some of the events I've been putting on for years. And I just kept the ones that have been great. I mean, I put on some 1 mile races, the men's 5K. I did that was a one hit wonder.
What was it? Men's 5K?
I did an Atlanta men's 5K. It was in 2013.
Just because there's so many women's races, why not do a men's race kind of thing?
Yeah, it's exactly how
And it was like, okay, but it's just not something you want to do again?
No, I just didn't pick up saying, you know, it's a business decision.
Right.
At some point, you know, I'm not going to be out there putting on races for two people, you know.
Right.
So I had to make a decision on that year. So the second year we started the promotion and I think we had like 20 men registered up to like a month out. I was like,
and you're like, all right, so just give people their money back and move on.
So that was an easy decision. And that's the risk you take with races. Like even our race next month or this month now, the Urban Tree Race, we're in that time period now where everybody waits to the last minute to see what they're going to do on the weekend. So the trends for registration are shifting because people like to wait and see what they want to do. Are you seeing that in obstacle racing too?
We haven't talked about my race, by the way, but you know about it, right?
The Run the ATL?
Right.
Yes.
So, and I know we share a hashtag. And again, much like the Atlanta podcast... Yeah. I launched it and then realized you had it, but I was like, and I looked at the Instagram and I was like, okay, you get a few posts around the time of that race, but I'm still going to keep it.
Yeah,
so.
No, it's, I don't see it as a conflict at all because ours is the ATL.
Right.
And Run the ATL is just
a
way to, but yours is actually Run the ATL.
But I don't know if you've heard me talk about it or not, but you know I did not set out to be a race director. Like that was not my goal. I literally thought 15 of my friends would come if we set up this thing to go around. I literally thought that. I was genuinely surprised when 60-something people signed up and 40 showed up. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And so now it's like, it's
congrats
been like...
Congrats on that.
Well, thanks. But remember, I'm like, and I'm, you know, I'm not fucking street legal. I'm like afraid to say it, but it's like I literally was like the first, like when we started, I like didn't have a Facebook page because I was like, oh no. And it's like, listen, at some point, if somebody comes around and says you can't do this, I guess I'll deal with it. Yeah. But for now...
I think we have bigger problems to worry about than a bunch of people running around town.
I think so too. But here's the thing. Here's what I did find. I did find that you get a ton of these late registrations.
Yes.
And you wonder, this is to me is like a psychology thing. Why does someone do something against their self-interest?
Yeah.
Now, I don't mean, well, everybody's going to do the early bird because you don't know necessarily that early. But somewhere between a month out or 6 weeks out, and the day before, you probably figured out you wanted to go,
yeah.
and you're going to pay top dollar because
yeah.
you waited
they
till...
They don't care about discount codes.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
I've really cut back on discount codes. Like, I want to do them so bad because I think, okay, I'll put that out there, and 20 people are going to write it. I just have proven to myself over and over again it doesn't make a difference.
Well, what I started to do was just the time thing.
Yeah.
Right? And that's, I think, what works, right? You go...
The price increases.
May 1st, here's the price increase. Yep. June 1st, here's the price increase. And then, like, it's not like you want to punish people, but you just realize that, like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just like, well, okay, well, oh. I mean, I also, like, kind of make up my own bling and all that stuff, and I don't have t-shirts to order, so it's a little different for me. But I still have to prepare. Like, I want to make sure, like, I try to go above and beyond on, like aid station stuff,
yeah.
and afterwards, like, we've, like, served chili and made it cool and blah blah blah. But for you, like, how difficult is that? Because I know it's like, God forbid you run out of shirt for someone,
right.
and they go bananas on Facebook, like, they didn't have my shirt.
Yes, that's probably the most, and there's nothing stressful, but that's the most stressful part if there was a ranking of stress levels, because you want everyone to have the great experience and,
right.
and get everything they're supposed to get. So, you know, we had to cancel the Monday Night Brewing race this past year because it was the day of the snowstorm.
Oh, wow.
And so that, I learned so much about people through that experience. Because, you know, first thing is people don't realize how much you pay for.
You've already spent the money and
so,
they want their money back.
They, you know, the request for the refunds. And it made me just, I'm like, when you're making this request, are you thinking through? And the answer is no, but are you thinking through all of the situation, you know, so I did a lot of education with people. And then the other thing is, just the amount of stuff I have, about 20 cases of pint glasses. I tried to give away as many t-shirts as I could. I mean, cause they got the date on them. They, you know, they can't do anything. So it's a frustrating part. Even with this new race, the Monday Nighter, we got these really, really cool dinosaur shirts made. And
well, let's back up a little bit. So, which race are we talking about?
So,
the 10-miler?
The 10-miler 10K, the one that we do in December.
Okay, so the one I've run a few years ago.
We had to cancel it in 2017 because it was the day of the snowstorm.
Okay, so when you were looking at the weather, were you freaking out?
No.
In the days
leading
up?
I didn't believe that it was going to snow.
Because you were like, yeah, we say this.
It was Thursday. It was on Thursday. It was a beautiful day.
So you were already down there probably setting up.
Yeah, we had packet pickup all week long. We were actually sitting at packet pickup on Thursday joking about, oh yeah, da, da, da.
So Friday night comes and the storm hits.
And it was serious. They under predicted that storm. You know
right.
how they usually over?
Right.
They were like flurries that will end at 4 o'clock. It started
so
snowing
at
4 o'clock.
Did your heart sink?
Well, it was a tough decision because, you know, we had people emailing and calling us, trying to force our hand in making the decision. I didn't want to make it too early.
Right.
And I also didn't want to, you know, and, you know, at the end of the day, I told people, like, if you're not comfortable with the situation, then don't come. You know what I mean? If we decide to move forward with it, and the only way we were going to move forward is if the roads were passable, and they were not passable that day. So it was just more, you know, just trying to be responsible. You know, safety obviously is always the number one thing. Making the decision. We ended up doing a party at the brewery that day. We did it at like 9 o'clock, and we were like, only if you can get there safely, you know, because parts of Atlanta, I think they were still,
I'm trying to remember, but I can't.
Yeah.
But they all seemed to run together.
It was actually a true story. For being from Indiana, I say it was a true story.
No, I'm sure it was, but I just can't. Again, like we've had a few that were better than they thought or worse than they thought.
Yeah.
But also I find that people in the burbs have a totally different experience than us.
They do.
Right? Like, they're like, I can't get out of my driveway. And I'm like, what? Because they live in some suburb that doesn't have any traffic.
Yep.
So was your first instinct when you decided, like, okay, easiest move is to do the transfer thing, and then I'll deal with, if someone complains a lot, I'll give them their money back. Like, what was your thinking as a business owner to handle it?
Well, I mean, we have a policy that we don't offer refunds.
Right.
So we had to hold true to that.
Right.
And I did everything I could to get people. Monday Night Brewing was very generous. They said people could come for 2 weeks to get their glass, their shirt, and get free beer. So they did it. Our race was supposed to be on the 9th. You could come all the way up until Christmas, basically, to come and drink for free and all that stuff. So we tried to make as much amends as we could, but there was no refunds being offered because we already paid for everything.
Right.
Yeah. And I did offer discounts for this year.
Right.
On all of our events.
Well, here's the other part that I found fascinating. Uh-huh. Is not just the no-show factor, which we can talk about.
Yes.
But the no-show factor of the people that were the super late registration.
Yeah.
I was like,
yeah.
So 2 days ago, you paid top dollar. And I used to kind of write everybody.
Yeah.
And again, remember, I'm not talking about that many.
Yeah.
Like, I barely cracked the triple digits.
Yeah.
But I would see who didn't show up, and I would shoot them a quick note. Because some people bother to say, hey, yeah. I'm not going to be there.
Right.
And for
very
me,
few, though.
Yeah. Right? And for me, because I don't... Because this isn't, like, it's not a huge profit thing for me. I just say, like, just fine, come next time, right? And most of them don't.
Yeah.
But I realized if I didn't write them, they just forgot about it, moved on with their life. And even the amount of people that I've said, just come next year, I never hear from them again. It's fascinating.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me.
Because trust me, if somebody gives me something for free, I'm probably going to remember and I'll cash that in.
Yeah.
Or at least give it to somebody. Like, hey, I can't make it, but... Like, OCR is a whole thing because it's not just the I forgot to train thing or I got a wedding.
Yeah.
It's that it's like it's an hour away, 45 minutes away, and I really forgot to train. It's not just a street 5K that I can walk through. I got it, blah, blah, blah. So I thought the numbers would be equivalent over here, like 15 to 20%.
Yeah.
But I talked to a guy who said it was closer to 30%.
Yeah, it depends on the, excuse me, the distance, I think, too. Like,
so as the distance goes up, more people know show. You're saying?
I think it's the opposite. Because if you, it's a 5K, you only pay $25, then you're more likely to be like, it's just $25. I don't feel like running today. But if it's a longer distance event.
Oh, you're more invested.
Yeah, you've paid more for it. And hopefully you have been. The majority of the people who don't show up for the longer distance is because they didn't train or, excuse me. And then with our races having the two options, we'll get a lot of people who will downgrade.
Right.
From 10 miler to 10K.
Right.
Or 10K to 5K. So.
Right. Can we talk about the run bum rule?
What's that? Run whatever you feel like running that day?
You told me you can't drop mid-race. Like, did he drop mid-race one time?
Yeah, that year he did.
Well, by the way, he told me that. I'm not capping on him. I think he's the one who said that you changed the rules, that you have to decide.
Yeah, he helped us implement the rule that when whatever you start off doing, that's what you're going to be scoring in.
Right.
If you change your mind mid-race, you're disqualified. But,
right.
Yeah,
the one time I did two distances with the winter race, I feel like we had so many people drop down.
Yeah. Because people are ambitious. And, you know.
It's just like, it's why people bail out of any race with loops in them.
Yeah.
Right? Like if there's an ultra race and, like, you come in once, like the ones they do, like at Sweetwater, right?
Yeah.
Like, if you can bail on that first loop because you're not feeling it anymore, people, including me, like, I'm done.
Sweetwater race.
I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, we could probably have a whole other discussion about just race directing and race trends. It's just really fascinating to me. I got a chance to go. This year, this has been my year of kind of investing in the craft of race directing. So I've been to our Running USA conference, which is the kind of the industry conference, and then the Roadrunners Club of America conference.
Right.
And it was just cool, just nerding out with people talking about running. Like, one of my favorite sessions was about course management and marking the course.
Right.
Like, I was just sitting there like, loving, like, talking about, like, coning and marking and how to create turns and things like that.
Right. Well, it's
fun.
Interesting because, you know, when I interviewed, I can't think of his name now, the dude that you said you heard.
JT.
He and the guy from Human Movement, you know him?
No.
So they're a couple years old now, but a couple years ago, there's two things I want to talk about before you go, and I know you got to go. And one is themed races, and one is this big thing you're doing.
Yes. The race.
Right. But is, so Human Movement puts on a ton of races too, big and small, but they kind of, at least these guys, they have kind of a similar attitude of like, we're just these guys that put cones out in the middle of the road and, you know, put on a good time. And they kind of like that fun spirit is why people want to do their races, even though they may have thousands of entries.
Yeah.
Right? Is that they're not like super, you know, I don't know what the word is. Like, you just expect it to be more quote unquote serious, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, I love the idea of being kind of like that right in between, you know, we want to be professional and put on great events, but also always want to keep that kind of grassroots feel.
Right.
And make it feel like, okay, I'm just coming to hang out. Like, my favorite thing is when people come with their friends.
Right.
To enjoy the race, and then they end up meeting other people, like, who live in different parts of town or whatever it may be.
Right.
So.
But the interesting thing, so one thing you touched on that someone told me was kind of a trend is the idea of, if you can start, again, like, organically, because people smell a rat when you're trying to force something on them. But if organically you're doing, like, the weekly get-together or the weekly run, and then those do become your customers for when you do put on a 5K, 10K, or, I don't know, whatever you decide to put on, because every week they show up and they get training or camaraderie, and hey, well, guess what? Once a month or once every 2 months, you can pay for something. You, right. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And is that kind of a model you're seeing working for you?
Yeah, or? I mean, that became our model. Like I said, our West Midtown Run Club, I started that run club because I wanted to have a running group in the West Midtown area, because we started that before all that stuff that's in West Midtown is there. The only thing that was there was West Egg and Five Seasons Brewery and a couple of apartment complexes. All of those places up and down Howell Mill Road and Marietta Boulevard were not there when we first started running. So yes, a lot of those.
Every time I go up that hill, I think about the race.
Huff Road?
What's the big one?
Huff Road. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! I remember distinctly walking up it and people passing me, and then running down and passing them all back because you know that's the move.
Yeah.
You don't need to run up that hill. But I just remember it like. Yeah. Walking at a good clip.
Huff and Puff, that's what we call it.
That's funny that it's called Huff Road. But
yeah.
Okay.
You did a 10-miler.
Yeah.
So you did Ellsworth Industrial and Huff Road. It's like a back-to-back.
Ellsworth is the long
that
one,
was,
though, right?
Yeah, that was awful.
Right. But honestly, I do think of it every time I go there.
Yeah, so. Well, you know, real quick story of how that, we planned the race for Monday night. So the way that came about was Monday night said, hey, would you like to put on a race that starts and finishes our brewery? I was like, let me get back to you on that.
Right.
Went back to them, came up with an idea. And we wanted to make it a West Side race. There's no other races still to this day that run completely on the West Side. I don't even know of very many races that go over to the West Side the way we do.
Right.
And so we kept trying to map out ways to avoid it. And we were like, you know what? Forget it. Let's just get all the hills in there.
Right.
So we marketed it as a very hilly and challenging course. So
right.
That's how that came about. And I think people sign up for it because it's awful.
Let me ask you this, right? Like, this is what I see a lot of. I was talking about this. You must know Enrique from the track club.
Yeah.
So Enrique and I was talking about this. So I did the Publix Marathon, uh-huh. And I'm the guy who doesn't do street races.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
I loved all the neighborhoods. I loved the people cheering. Like, I loved it.
Yeah.
Which is, I did not expect.
I did Publix last year.
I did not expect it to. But you see all the advertisements, like, at these conventions and in the magazines, like, you know, flattest marathon, you know, fastest PR, whatever. Yeah. I'm like, well, why don't you just run up and down your street 26 times? Because that's going to give you a fast time, too.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they all have to be challenging, but this idea that, like, we have the flattest one, come get a PR, is like, doesn't it seem a little weird to you?
That people think that that's going to attract people.
It and clearly it, does,
it will,
though.
Well, it'll attract some people, but it's not. Here's how I look at it. The amount of people who would not run the race because it's hilly is not enough to not put on the race. You know what I mean? You're still going to get... Gosh, I'm so congested. Hold on.
Dude, I've been there many times.
I can't even understand myself. But for the Monday Night Brewing Race sells out every year.
Right.
And it's the hilliest race. It's comparable to the 10-miler.
Right.
So people aren't going to not sign up. They're going to complain and tongue-in-cheek complain about it, but they're not going to... They're not gonna not sign up because it's hilly.
Right.
Or they might use that as an excuse to not sign up, but there's probably some other 20 other reasons why they don't sign up. So
you're talking about investing in your business. Did you come, do you remember, they might still do it, and I'm not on the email list anymore, but Active came to town like...
Yeah, I'm an Active client.
Right.
So you have to be an Active client to get invited to those things.
Well, I'm not a client, but because I'm media, I got invited.
Oh, really?
And so I went. Are they still doing it? Like the little dog and pony?
I haven't done it in a couple
years. Okay, so I haven't missed it.
Maybe a couple years, so.
So they did one at Maggiano's and one whatever. And the one thing that they pointed out, one I just remember seeing was they they were showing like, hey, we have all this data, and here's like these trends in Georgia. Yeah. And obviously, spring and fall is super busy, and people don't do the summer because it's the hottest. And like, yes, you're gonna have a lot of people not sign up because it's the hottest, but you have the least competition.
Yeah.
It's a time to cash in.
Yep.
Like, not a bad idea if you want to do a... And I know that now there's Hotlanta Half and a couple like that.
But the Peachtree Road Race, it's right the smack dab in the middle of the summer. They get 60,000.
Right, but nobody else else is doing races. So it's like, it'd be a good time to snag that time of year.
Well, I mean, you say that, but at the same time, you can still find about 3 or 4 races every weekend. I think that the 3rd and 4th weekend in July and the 3rd and 4th weekend in January are probably the two lowest, but you're still going to find something.
So do you even bother to look to see? Obviously, you're not going to do it on Peachtree weekend, but or the marathon weekends, but do you check the calendar?
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely certain races I would not want to conflict with. Our calendar is very... I try to spread it out so that, you know, if you wanted to be a fan of Running Nerds and Run Social, you could do a race month. And we start in March, so...
And you do a race a month for the year?
Pretty much. So March, April, May. We don't do one in June, August, July. Yeah. I mean, sorry, we don't do one in July. And we don't do one in November.
And you as a business person, is your ultimate goal, this is kind of what I was trying to get at earlier with the numbers, is your goal more races, more entrants per race, both?
Well, I just want to put on great races that people want to enjoy. That's the ultimate goal. And the mark of do they enjoy them is that they sign up and come out and run. So each race has a cap. If I was to reach the cap on each one of the races, then I would be completely happy. I don't want to be a race producing machine, so to speak. I'm talking about my races. Now we do consulting for other races where we can do logistics, directing, things like that. And we do have, you know, some wiggle room in our schedule for taking on more clients. Like, I'm putting on a race for Porsche Cars North America.
Oh, nice.
I'm doing a race for Rest with the Furniture Bank, which will be here at Monday night. So we're the behind-the-scenes logistics for those races.
And so why would they just not, I don't know, I guess, like... Why is it? What's the difference between making it your race? Because clearly, if they're partners, that means that they're getting some of the money for you.
My race means I'm responsible for the success and failure of the race. I'm the last one that gets paid if there is a profit.
Right.
Because I mean, there's a lot of races that breaking even is you know. So, and it's my marketing, it's my branding. I have complete creative control.
Right.
For a race where I'm the consulting or the logistics person, I'm just basically helping them with planning the permit, the routes, getting all the millions of things that it takes to put the race on to happen. But I typically like for my clients to take full responsibility for their marketing and sponsorship. And then they just, you know, let me handle all the race stuff, so to speak.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it. All right, so let's talk about
the race.
Is that what it's called?
It's called the race.
Okay.
Keep it simple.
Okay, yeah. I like it.
So the race is a half marathon weekend event that's going to be taking place here in Atlanta, the inaugural race in October. And our mission and goal and purpose is to celebrate and highlight the strong, rich Black culture and history here in Atlanta through a running event. So it's going to be a weekend. The Friday is going to be Health and Wellness Expo. Our start and finish location is at Impact Event Center, which is Impact Church. But they're an event center when they're not the church, which is actually at East Point. So we start literally 0.2 miles south of Atlanta border at East Point. And we're going to be running through some really cool neighborhoods that have really never seen running events coming through the neighborhoods. We want to be make a charitable impact on the communities that we're running through. And we want to get massive national support from the African-American running community and the entire running community. So it's going to be a very unique event. A lot of focus on small business, minority-owned business, Black businesses. And our plan and our marketing has been really cool because it's very grassroots. We did a Kickstarter campaign to actually launch the idea for the event. Are you familiar with Kickstarter and
how
it works? Yeah. So it was cool. We actually did the launch party for the Kickstarter right at a World Soccer Park.
Nice.
The day after Thanksgiving.
Nice.
And we actually, we got 700 people to back the race, which equated to about $70,000.
Nice.
So those, that money is basic, was basically registration fees. So people were kind of pledging anywhere from $75 to $100. And if we hit our goal, which we did, then that pledge would basically be their reward is a registration for the race.
Nice.
So yeah, it was really fun. The Kickstarter campaign was the month of December. We opened up registration to the public on January 15th, which is MLK Day, and we're about 5 months out and very, very excited. So some of the neighborhoods we're going to be running through, Sylvan Hills, Adair Park, Capitol View, Oakland City, Castleberry, the AUC, I'm going in order, West End, Westview. We're going to hit a big chunk of the Beltline, pretty much from Langhorne, we're on Ralph David Abernathy overpass.
Right.
Sorry, the highway. Overpass to... No, sorry, Westview overpass. Am I saying that right? Yeah. Straight down, we'll do the little hiccup to come off and get back on and take that all the way to Adair Park. And I think we are going to be the first half marathon to use that stretch of the Beltline. I'm very excited about that. I don't think there's another one between now and then. And then Sylvan Road, straight back to the start. So
now I'm familiar with all those neighborhoods because I live over here.
Yeah.
And because I've explored with my Beltline stuff. But if you are listening to this and you have not heard of those neighborhoods, you should probably come and support this race.
Yeah. And one thing that we want to do is visit each of those neighborhoods, their neighborhood associations, and you know, tell them what we're doing and see how they want to get involved and even create some kind of neighborhood pride. We'd love to get, you know, a representative from each neighborhood to run the race so they can, you know, get the neighbors out to cheer and support. And then the probably the coolest, so the race is on Saturday. I didn't even tell you date. So Friday, October 12th is our Health and Wellness Expo, which will be at Impact.
Right. You started saying that, right?
Then Saturday morning will be the race. It's a half marathon and a 5K. The 5K pretty much does the first part of the first mile and a half and then loops back. And then our on Sunday, what we're going to do is a day of service. So we're inviting all of our race participants to participate in a community-wide service project. So I'm very excited about that.
Because I don't think anybody's done anything like this.
No one's ever done anything like that. And it's going to be a collective effort of all the different nonprofits, community organizations that we're going to touch. And we want to have, my goal is 1,000 people serve, all wearing their race shirts, from all over the country and just doing great things around the community. So again, staying kind of in that theme and that vibe of it's not just the race, it's about what we can do to impact our community through such a race. And again, a huge emphasis on celebrating Black culture and Black history, and Atlanta is a great place to start. You know, we've already gotten folks from various cities, New York, Chicago, the D.C. area, and they say, oh, man, this would be a great model for to put on in other cities. But we definitely are excited to take it on. So,
yeah, and I think this idea of, like, the neighborhoods cheering and all that, I think that's awesome.
Yeah.
And probably, like, as the years go on, it'll get bigger and bigger. Like, with any race, like oh, yeah, those like that day we saw those people going by our house.
And kind of going back to what we talked about earlier, the idea of seeing hundreds and hopefully thousands of African Americans running down the streets, I think that can be so powerful for our youth and our communities to see it. Because normally what happens, and I don't have anything against or anything, I absolutely love our Atlanta running community, but there's an opportunity for us to make an impact in other areas other than just Midtown, Downtown, Little Five, you know.
No, trust me.
Publix and Hot Atlanta, they have a great course. I love those races. I've run all of them. But this is something that can be an addition to.
Listen, this is, I got excited when I saw, because I looked at the map and I was like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, no one does stuff like around here.
Right.
So that's awesome. And I don't do a lot of street races, but like, again, it depends on my schedule, but like, I want to do your 10 mile again. First of all, because there aren't even a lot of 10 mile races,
It's a great distance.
Well, it's just kind of a cool, like, you know what I mean? Because I'm not coming out for a lot of 5Ks. Yeah. I might do like a 10K or two. Like, I've done the west side.
The Beltline?
Sorry, the east side 10K up a couple of times. even before I started all. Anyway, I don't do a lot of races, but yours are like interesting, and that's kind of the other
thing.
Thank
you. That's a huge compliment.
No, for sure, dude. Yeah. Like that's why I would want to do them, because like it's different, right? I did the Monday night to Monday night.
Monday night to Monday night. Yeah, that's fun.
We should do that more, because that's a great. Cool thing, yeah. Right? Well, I Ubered with my neighbor up there, and I ran home.
Yeah,
it was
that
awesome.
That was really fun. Yeah, I wonder if we had about, 20 people came out for that?
I mean, not
that
a lot.
That was like a last-minute decision, like, hey, come run.
Right, but it was a cool idea, and it's great for them. Like, hey, we have two breweries. Come see both of them.
Yeah, it was cool. So, yeah, that's kind of the idea of just putting on events that people want. I'm not ever going to be that person that's trying to force an event down people's throats. I don't knock any races. Anything that gets people out moving. Are you going to give me the Atlanta quiz?
Yeah, let's do that. Then.
I'm
let's
ready.
Okay. I'm excited. No one has yet asked for the Atlanta quiz. This is exciting. I was hoping it would like get like its own little following.
Yes.
Do you know the first question on the Atlanta quiz?
I don't know the order of the questions.
Okay, well, the first question is always, what is your go-to Waffle House meal?
All right. Smothered, covered hash browns.
Okay.
Pecan waffle, coffee, and a... Yeah, in a water.
See, interesting, pecan waffle is becoming like I've never ordered anything but a regular waffle. Yeah. People seem to...
They do a good job with their waffles, so... It's not like the pecans have to... You need the pecans, but they're a good waffle. They dice them up really nice in there, so...
I think I'm going to have to go with the pecan waffle. Okay, what is your favorite restaurant in the...
That's a tough one. That's really tough, because I like a lot of different genres of restaurants.